to Around the Homestead podcast, where we share information on topics from gardens to goats. Our aim is to provide small farmers and landowners valuable education on projects that may arise around the homestead. Whether you have been on the homestead all your life or you have just begun the farm lifestyle, we hope you garner helpful tips to make your rural lifestyle most rewarding. Now here are our hosts, Brad McGinley and Sean Rhodes.
Well, welcome to Around the Homestead podcast. This episode, we have a real treat for you, I think. We appreciate you joining us. You know, it's that time of year when everybody's got fishing on their mind. The weather's warming up, and everybody wants to get out there and catch some fish. And, you know, Sean, one of the main questions, I guess, if I could list all the questions that I've got as a county extension agent, make a top 10 list, pond algae would definitely be in the top 10 for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. We get those questions all the time, and it's not always, they don't always say I've got pond algae.
Yeah.
I've got this green stuff in my pond and I can't fish, you know?
Yeah. Trying to fish and I got slime on my hook or whatever. So today we're going to talk a little bit about how to control pond algae and what causes it. And we've got a special guest on the Around the Homestead podcast today, Mr. George Selden. He's the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff aquaculture and fishery specialist, and he's joining us today. And George, we're glad you've joined us for today.
I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for the introduction. I wish you'd tell my wife I was special.
Well, we might work on that for you. So, George, you know, we get a lot of questions as county extension agents about, you know, pond weeds, algae in farm ponds. And first off, I think just like, you know, identifying any other problem, is what is algae and what causes that issue in ponds?
Well, I'll back up just a minute before I get to that. The call always comes in as moss. I have moss in my pond. And the one plant it never will be is moss. But if you have a combination of sunlight, water, and nutrients, which it's mostly ponds in this state are fairly nutrient loaded, especially if people let livestock in them. Aquatic vegetation. Today we'll talk about algae, which comes in three different forms. You have the just basically planktonic algae that gives your color, your pond a nice green color, the bloom on which your fish feed, and just kind of makes it look a little green and soupy. And then we have a plant that sometimes gets confused, two plants that sometimes get confused with higher plants, Chara and Nitella, which are both macro algae, but they look like higher plants, but they're actually an algae. But the real problem, and I've been getting calls for the past month on it, among other weeds, is the filamentous algae. The worst one, and probably the most common one, is Pathophora. The way I like to describe it is if you grab a handful of it and squeeze the water out, you kind of, it's like you got a piece of steel wool or a Brillo pad. It's got some real structure to it, and it's just kind of, that's just gross. And there are pictures available, and before I forget, we do have a publication, the NP556, which talks about aquatic vegetation control, and it does have some pretty good pictures in it to start your identification, because before you do anything, you really got to ID what you're dealing with, and then you can narrow in on solutions.
That's true. Yeah, we do have some great publications on our on our website, and I we'll link those on our webpage on our Around the Homestead podcast webpage, and you can access those. So, George, now that you've identified, we know that we've got some pond algae. How do we manage that, and how do we prevent that from happening, or how do we treat that?
Well, the chances of preventing it from happening are really remote. Honestly, if you manage to prevent the filamentous algae, what it'll do is it'll shift to something else, which maybe is what you want. The standard treatment to kill algae and the most effective algicide out there is still copper sulfate or one of the copper products. In your neck of the woods, it's unlikely you're going to be using copper sulfate crystals simply because your alkalinity in your ponds is typically really low because you don't have a lot of limestone, a lot of watershed ponds. And if you put copper sulfate in a pond with low alkalinity, then you're going to make somebody happy because you're going to be buying new fish because you've killed all your fish with copper toxicity. But there are other products out there. They're referred to as copper complexes. There's several different formulations. In the MP44, on page 152, because I had to look it up yesterday, is I've listed a pretty fair, pretty complete list of all the herbicides. People can do comparison shopping, because when they search for herbicides and algicides, they can do it online because none of these are restricted use. That makes it a lot easier to comparison shop because these things tend to be pretty pricey. But in your neck of the woods for filamentous algae control, you're typically going to be looking at one of the copper complexes, and you should plan on treating every 10 to 14 days whenever you see it popping up, simply because you're going to be battling it all season. If you have reasonable expectations that you're going to be battling it, you stay on top of it. You don't wait for it to become a problem.
I see. So what about, if we're going to use those copper complexes, or what about the actual application of those in a pond situation? Sometimes I know that can be a little bit challenging for homeowners.
Yeah. Your options, when it's up around the shore bank and it's in shallow water, you can use something as low tech as, 1 or 2 gallon hand sprayer. You follow label recommendations on mixing it per gallon, and you just spray it, spray what plant you can reach as you can reach it. For a whole pond treatment, then you're looking at using something like weighted trailing hoses, in which you've got a John boat with a spray rig on it and some hoses that hang down into the water, and you try to, pump the herbicide to just above where the weed bed is and kind of go from there. And there's actually a couple pages on building one in the MP556. And I have a better one out of Florida that I can certainly email out. These things are not too terribly complex. You just have to, make the investment of a couple $100 and decide that, well, I'm going to have the best equipment or the most appropriate equipment I can have to treat these submerged weeds. But for the stuff around the shoreline, break out the hand sprayer and just treat around the edges, because a lot of your fishing people, that's where the problem is anyway. If as it gets deeper, it's less likely to have the plants growing, which is good. It's typically going to be growing around the edges, and that's where you can reach with a hand sprayer, and that's where your lure is going to get snagged up anyway. So you don't have to make it more difficult than it is. There's better ways to do it, but you don't have to make it too difficult. And the thing you need to do is just try to make an effort, start treating with appropriate algicide or herbicide, and go from there.
You talked a little bit about alkalinity and low alkalinity. Are there ways that landowners can get their ponds tested for alkalinity so they can know that if they can treat that or not?
Sure. Typically, I know the yes, it'll be a lot more detailed than you want. You might be testing your water for livestock, and that's going to have a whole range of things to test. If it's just one sample, you can just, grab a clean water bottle, rinse it out a couple of times, grab a sample and probably give it to you, then you'd mail it to me. But these alkalinity test kits, I think there are test strips available that aren't too terribly expensive on Amazon. And just your neck of the woods, you're just going to have soft water anyway.
Yeah.
So I can pretty much guarantee especially if you look at a pond and it's kind of muddy and it never settles, that's a real indication that you got some soft water.
Okay.
I should say that I mentioned copper as a treatment. It's not the only treatment. There's another algicide out there that's pretty good. The sodium carbonate peroxyhydrate. There's about a half dozen to a dozen different formulations. And what it does is it, when you apply it to the water, the crystals or the pellets turn to hydrogen peroxide and they kill the algae that they contact with. It's just, they tend to be more expensive and most people don't use them. I will mention that tilapia can be used to control algae. If you have high enough populations and your bass don't really go after them and you're willing to have them die every November, they take their time, but they can be effective. And sometimes they're a nice little option if people just want to use something that's not a algicide and they also want to be able to feed some bass. That's just another option, because I don't want people thinking that your only option is copper sulfate or copper complexes.
Okay. What about, you know, last time we get questions about grass carp. Is grass carp an option for controlling algae?
There's a retired professor at Texas A&M that one time when he was in grad school, he had some fingerling grass carp. They want to say are probably about 2-inch fish, and he stocked them at a rate of 5,000 per acre. At that rate, they did eat the Pothophora. Other than that, grass carp are going to turn their nose up at it, and even if they manage to munch on a little of it, they will never control it. I do recommend stocking grass carp for a whole host of other reasons, but if you expect them to control your filamentous algae, you're going to be sadly mistaken. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. And now for Arkansas, you got to stock triploids anyway, and so they'll be a little pricier.
Okay.
George, is there any grass carp help with in a pond?
In general, if it's under the water and it's soft, grass carp have a preference for it. If it's fibrous or immersed, they tend not to like it. There is a response rating in the MP44 for grass carp. Grass carp will eat watermeal and duckweed to their heart's content, but they will never control it. So that's kind of like an in-between where they have a preference, but they don't control it. The stuff they have a preference for, like Southern Naiad or Sago pondweed or some of the other pondweeds or Egeria, Hydrilla they love. They love Chara and Nitella. It's soft, succulent, under the water plants. They will go after them and tend to control them pretty well if given enough time and if the bass don't eat them. But the stuff that's up and out of the water, cattails, lotus, lilies, they just kind of turn their nose up at it and they won't touch it. It may be a side benefit or a drawback of grass carp is that when they eat plants, they kind of sloop them up and they grind them a little and it goes in their digestive tract. And a lot of the nutrients come out the back end ready to go to plant growth. They typically will go to like phytoplankton. So grass carp could stimulate a phytoplankton bloom, which might improve your fishing and also have some other benefits. But some people, if they really want clear water, you know, that's not something they're looking for. But, you know, you can't have everything.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something that I was getting to is when we talk about pond weed issues, my most common one over here in Western Arkansas is watermeal.
Yeah.
Everybody seems to fight watermeal during the summer. And you know, it's hard to come up with a good answer to that because I've seen some people treat and it does real good, but it comes right back.
Well, you know, you've got a plant that's really small and a lot of times with watermeal, it's going to be growing with duckweed and oftentimes mosquito fern. So you get that trifecta. They are controllable. You know, if you use a contact herbicide, you're going to knock it back, but you're going to be treating it all year. The systemics tend to be, they take longer. If you have a larger pond, you don't want to use the systemics because you're having to treat the whole water volume, and that can get pricey. If you, you know, for a 10th acre cattle pond that's 3 foot deep, it's manageable. If you've got a 20 acre reservoir, you know, and especially if you're going to start pumping out of it, you know, you've got a whole host of other reasons why you don't want to do that. Fortunately, there's a fact sheet that came out last year that I wrote. For the life of me, I'm blanking on what the number of it is. I want to say it's FSA like 9526 or something. I can look it up, but there is a fact sheet you can give to your, to give to your stakeholders, and, or that, you know, they can download it and kind of give them a primer on what the herbicides are out there. For small ponds, I've had real good luck with fluoridone. It's not supposed to be highly rated for it in, for the water meal part of it, but I've just had good luck. And if you give it enough time, you're good to go.
Yeah, I have had some treat with it, and it seems to be more of the affordable end of that, even though
especially since there's more formulations out there, you can do some comparison shopping. I will mention that if it's strictly a water meal pond, and if you have some patience, goldfish can be quite effective. You know, I think the stocking rate's about 35 pounds to the acre of mixed sex. And if you don't have bass predation, after about a couple years, goldfish can really clean up a lot of that water meal. They tend to love it. They don't touch the duckweed, but they will go after the water meal. So it's a, that's a biocontrol out there that can be very helpful. And they're pretty cheap, and they're grown. And Arkansas grows a hell of a lot of goldfish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Folks about that from time to time.
Those goldfish, are they available at, you know, it, with the fish trucks or wherever? Where would you purchase those at?
For me, I would go to the grower up I know in Paragould and dip them out of his vats when he isn't looking. But it's out of date, but there is a sport fish supplier's guide. I think the latest one we did was, I want to say 2012. So it's a little out of date, but most of these guys are still in business, and that's a downloadable publication, or I can email it. And then you can just, you know, there, it's listed by species, and then you call them and, you know, kind of haggle on a price. And then depending on how many you're getting, you either go get them or they might bring them to you. You know, there's a whole host of ways that thing, I have heard with fish trucks going around, I tend to think they probably do have goldfish on them. If you find a neighborhood bait shop that has goldfish, maybe they bring a special order in for you because you're getting, you know, 30, 40 pounds worth. You know, that there's a couple of different ways to go about that.
So, George, if you were, you know, on the front end, if we had a listener out there that was thinking about building a pond, let's say they're going to build a pond, is there something they could do on the front end to help prevent weed pressure or algae, watermill, or not prevent it, but reduce the chances?
Well, the first thing I would say is get your soil maps and make sure you have enough clay. So, because you have no idea how many calls I get for leaky ponds.
Sure.
And so first thing, let's make sure your pond holds water. Before it starts filling, spread a bunch of agricultural limestone on it. That'll help with the alkalinity. Try to give yourself a 3-to-1 slope to get it down to 3 feet as quickly as possible. Because below 3 feet, you can shade out the bottom and eliminate your weed growth there. With a greater slope, you're reducing the amount of area that you can get plants growing. You know, it's about controlling, you know, light penetration and getting it in, avoiding these shallow areas where weeds grow. During the winter time, using an aquatic dye just to turn it a nice pretty blue can go a long way. You know, you put it out in December, January, and that'll carry you into March, as long as you don't have water flowing out. But that'll shade out that bottom area and relieve the pressure that you're gonna face come in that spring. really take a year-round approach to your pond where you know you're going to get stuff. What you had in the past is always going to be a good indication of what you're going to have in the future. So if you know what herbicide you're going to use, have that on hand so you can start treating early. I get calls in August where, you know, a pond is filled up with, you know, fill in your own weed. Well, I mean, if you have it in August, you had it in April. You know, if you treated it there, you've got a small spot that you can kind of manage. There's no excuse to let it get to where it takes over the whole pond. You know, it's not going to, these things, there's one weed I can really think of that isn't real prevalent in Arkansas that has a senescence period during the summer. Everything else just tends to grow and grow until October or so when it gets cold and it gets dark, and then it'll shut itself down for a while. But, you know, have stuff on hand and treat early, you know, get, you know, stuff. If you see stuff popping up now that, you know, is going to get, you know, was there last year, treat it now. You know, it might only take a short squirt or a handful of a granular herbicide, or it's not going to take much. And if you stay on top of it, your results are always going to be just a lot better.
Sure. Sure. Well, George, we appreciate you joining us today on Around the Homestead podcast. And as always, you know, if you have pond weeds or any other issues, your local county extension agent can help identify what those weeds are in your pond. Maybe they're algae, or maybe they're some of those other weeds that George was talking about. And, you know, get contact your local county extension agent and get a picture, or text him a picture, email him a picture, whatever you can do to get those weeds identified on the front end, and we can help you kind of make a plan to work toward controlling those weeds in your pond. So again, George, we appreciate you joining us today on Around the Homestead podcast, and hopefully we'll probably be contacting you again about another episode in the near future, I'm sure.
Anytime, my pleasure.
All right, well, that's it for today on Around the Homestead podcast. We hope you'll join us on our next episode. We'll see you on the farm.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Around the Homestead podcast. To learn more about today's topic, be sure to visit our website at uaex.uada.edu. Be sure to join us next time on Around the Homestead podcast.